with the Tarrant Party, Tarrant County Libertarian Party, and he also was kind enough to let us stay with him last night. Mr. Louis Mises. There you go. Woo!
Driving that engine to Uncapistan. Wherever you want to get off, that's fine.
But what I love about this guy is that he is driving that engine along with all of us, but his message is kicking ass and is getting some awesome people inspired. So with that, just the last thing I wanted to talk about is just, again, thanking you. And I don't know if he's going to mention this, but at some point, I would love for you to maybe also share from your pocket if you want to throw a little bit of donation, because this takes a lot of money too. So if you have a little extra, whatever it is, I'm sure that they will appreciate it. So with that, Luis Fernando Mises, Emancipated Human, and thank you for having me again.
Thank Luis for telling us those fun facts. There's one more fact, which is that I love Mises to PCs. We're lucky enough in this state to have not one, but two voluntarian candidates running for governor of Texas. And two that are in this room right now. I'd like to bring one of them up right now to talk a little bit, and Luis kind of took everyone's time a little bit there. I didn't hook him off, so try to be short. Mr. Patrick Smith.
Being ruled in this state. Yeah. I am. Who is tired of being controlled and owned in this state?
Yeah.
I am. I'm running for not governor to erase all of that, to give you back ownership of yourself, to give you back control and agency over your consent. My campaign is about consent. It's consent-based. Because consent is the most magical thing in existence. It is something that exists as a mere thought between your ears. But it literally affects every interaction you have in your entire life. If you consent to something, it's good. If you don't consent to something, it's evil. It is the difference between good and evil. And it's in here. And you haven't had control over that your entire life. I think it's time to change that. I want you to lead yourself, own yourself, and get your consent back. Thanks. Oh,
is the only party in existence that believes that consent is the highest authority.
Amen.
And there is nobody who owns your body except for you. All right. Also, I'm very honored to introduce the next person also running for governor of the Republic of Texas, Mr. Cory Watkins.
First of all, thank you to the host for allowing us have this venue. This is awesome, amazing house. Adam, Ben, I've had a wonderful tour, wonderful time on tour with y'all. Y'all have been so kind to me. Thank you so much. I want to take 1 minute right now to thank somebody very special in my life. A lot of people shake my hand, say thank you for what you're doing. But a lot of people miss this one special person, and that's my wife. She does not get enough credit for what it takes me to do to spread this message. So I love you. Thank you so much. I'm running for governor in 2018. I am a hardcore libertarian. I believe in no government at all. I believe that you should own yourself and you should make all of your own choices. Government is in our way in every aspect of life, and I'm going to try to minimize that and get rid of it in every aspect of life. My main issues, cannabis freedoms here in Texas, we're being ignored when it comes to cannabis freedoms. Mm-hmm. I say people should be allowed to smoke as much cannabis as they want, grow as much cannabis as they want, sell it to their neighbors or their doctor if they want, whatever. Cannabis should be on the free market 100%. And I say that we should end the war on drugs immediately.
Yeah.
We should stop locking people in cages. And when I am governor, I will pardon anybody that has a non-violent victimless crime. Those will be forgiven.
Yeah. Amen.
We need to get rid of property taxes immediately and reduce all other taxes down to zero as soon as possible. Taxation is best.
Yeah.
Here, here.
And my last but one of my most important is the right to defend yourself. The government is in that way too much right now. In Texas, you have to have a license, you have to pay a tax, you have to, you know, ask for permission and get your fingers printed. That's all stuff we should not be doing. Those all need to go away. And you should be allowed to own whatever firearm or whatever it is that you want to own. And government has no business in that whatsoever. We should be allowed to walk into a bar with our Glock on our hip, order a pickleback and Jameson with some OG Kush. That's freedom. That's what we should be doing. Government needs to go away immediately. And that's why I'm running for governor here in Texas. I need your support. I'm delegate hunting right now. The most important thing right now is putting delegates in those seats and ones that represent the message of freedom the most. So that's what I'm searching for. If you're interested in being a delegate, come see me. We're a very serious campaign. We've been doing this since June, raised thousands of dollars, been all across the state of Texas. We're taking this very serious. So Adam, Ben, thank you guys again. Please check out my website, Corey Watkins for Texas. Thank you guys so much.
Also, as you can see, the state of liberty is going to be really good in Texas in just a few years. The movement is growing by leaps and bounds, and there's something that's become very clear to me after traveling for all over the United States the last 3 months. And that is that the Libertarian Party of Texas is the most powerful Libertarian Party in the entire country.
All right.
What we are doing is something called the Drive for 985. That is our goal, to put 985 of our delegates into the National Convention, which is in New Orleans from June 30th to July 3rd. 985 people from around the country is all we need to bring about one thing, which is that the headlines after that will read, Libertarians have taken over the Libertarian Party. Bring those 985 people, many of whom are in this room tonight. We want to accomplish two things at the convention. Number one, to introduce a unifying statement, something similar to the Dallas Accord of 1974. Anybody familiar with the Dallas Accord? It was an agreement in 1974 at the Nashville Convention of an alliance between anarchists and minarchists and whomever, that we are one party and we are fighting with the common enemy of big centralized government. I think if we make a unifying statement at the convention, we get rid of 90% of the Facebook battles immediately. Number two, we want to add the word localization into the party platform. Currently, the National Party platform says, generally speaking, that we stand for the reduction and elimination of government wherever possible. We want to add the word localization into that, too, because we think if you localize government as close to the individual as possible, your voice and your vote have more of a say in the matter. That's what we plan to do with the Drive for 985. And this man right here, Adam Kokesh, is that catalyst to get us all there. One of the big things that we need to take into account when thinking about 2020 is that there will be, there's about an 80-85% chance that there will be three podiums on that debate stage. The Super Bowl of politics. Two old party candidates saying the same shit we've heard for 100 years now.
Yep.
And one of them. And I want that podium to be manned by this guy right back here. That's the entire point. In order to do that, we need all of your help. This is extremely important because those old parties have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to get onto that debate stage. And one of them is going to figure out, all I need is 985 people. And what happens to our party when they figure that out? We lose the branding. And I want to protect the branding that libertarians have spent 40 years to build, that says that we are the party of principle and we are the only party that believes that you own yourself. That's the battle that we're up against. So it's extremely important that we all get involved. I want you all to sign up on these sheets back there. Elijah, wave your hand. Who will be passing around a clipboard at some point tonight? Please sign up. That will be just for our campaign. We're not like Ron Paul. We won't sell your information. I know I've been getting weird phone calls for a decade now. We won't do that. And if you're afraid of the government knowing who you are, don't kid yourself. And they got you. I met Adam a
about 6 or 7 years ago. I threw an event in Odessa, Texas, where I grew up, and I hired him to come speak at that event. And we became friends that night. I beat him arm wrestling, which nobody believes. It's not true. But there's something, and I knew him very much like the rest of you guys probably know him. A guy off of YouTube, a guy you've seen, you know, just on the internet. He had an RT show, radio show. Saw him get arrested at the Jefferson Memorial for dancing, which somehow illegal. But there's something that I've come to find out over him over these 6 or 7 years, which is that I think he's the most honest person I've ever met. And the reason I say that is because I've seen him be honest when it's harmed him to be honest. And even when a normal person would back away from the truth a little bit, he's not done that. And I think that's what we call integrity. And that's why I'm honored to be working with him, not only on this message, but on this particular campaign. My friend and my candidate, Mr. Adam Kotick.
Hello, Dallas!
Hey!
Oh, come on, are we in the right room? Taxation Death Run! So we're coming on the last 2 week stretch of what's been an amazing tour, and all over the country it feels like at every stop we level up and level up and level up, and this message and this campaign and this organization now gains more and more momentum. And this is the third tour I've done like this where we try to cover the entire country. And I really love how we get to step out of the typical libertarian bubbles that we find ourselves in, one being the online, you control your streams kind of bubble, right? The other one is events like this where libertarians come together to, you know, congratulate ourselves about being right about everything. And then somehow by the end of the night we're disagreeing about everything and you're all a bunch of socialists. But we get to go talk to regular Americans, you know, and we travel with the Freedom Mobile with the big Freedom logo, so I've seen out front. And so people will stop us and say, "Hey, what's freedom?" And normally I say people at gas stations, but on this tour we've been in the shop a lot, so mechanics. We've been talking a lot of mechanics. That's our slice of blue collar America for the Taxation and Theft Tour. And when they say, "Hey, what's freedom?" I get to say, "Hey, it's this book that I wrote when I was in jail for civil disobedience. It's about how we create a more peaceful, productive, and harmonious society by dissolving government entirely." And most of them go, "Sounds like a good idea." You'd be shocked the difference that you get in the reception with this message when you communicate it properly from a place of love and compassion rather than politically when you argue and debate. This isn't a political message. This is the anti-political message. You're sick of politics? Good. We've got the cure for that. You start with your reason. Why are we doing this? Not because we want to be right about everything. We happen to be right about everything, which is an exciting thing. But no, why? Because we want to help people. We want to create a more peaceful and harmonious and productive world for everyone. So I think that what we do as activists sometimes is dragging government along to be more in line with public opinion, you know, by the imperfect leash of democracy. You look at marijuana legalization as an example. You know why we talk about marijuana so much as libertarians? Because we're all just Republicans who smoke weed, right?
Amen.
So why do we talk about this? It's not just that you see, like in California, public opinion really preceded the change in policy, but the reasoning, why this is such an important issue, really speaks to the core of our message. Marijuana shouldn't be legal because it's safer than alcohol, or because it has these medical properties, or this industrial potential. No. Marijuana should be legal because no one but you has the right to decide what you put in your own body. And that's why it's an important issue that speaks to the core of this message that is waking people up as we find ourselves now at the end of the beginning of the end of the war on drugs, at least. Very exciting time to be alive, to feel this huge chunk of the government racket falling apart. And it's only because the public opinion changed decades ago. So similarly, with this campaign, sometimes I think that it's going to be really easy. And when people ask me, when I talk to these mechanics, a lot of them say, "Well, okay, so what are you doing about it?" And I get to say, I'm getting ready to run for president in 2020 on the platform of dissolving the entire federal government. And most of them say, sounds like a good start. We may have already won. It may be that easy to go and bring about the change that we want to see. So, you all know in waking up, very imperfect metaphor, of course, realizing that you're a libertarian, perhaps might be more accurate, we shed our delusions about the state, kind of one at a time, sometimes all, you know, in major chunks, for some lucky people all at once, but it's about giving up the excuses for violence that make government possible. Similarly, I've done something with my activism, my thinking about strategy. Now, I used to think that we have to wake up everybody if we're going to have a free society. You guys see the problem with this, right? Like, we don't get every American to read a dozen books and understand optimistic cycle theory and monetary policy. We're doomed! That can't be the answer. I mean, you know how hard it is to get Americans to read books these days? Now, this is where I get to point out that my book happens to be banned in U.S. prisons and jails. Excuse me, I'm sorry, take it back. It's been endorsed by the United States Department of Justice.
Yeah.
It's actually been banned. We got a letter from a warden on the Department of Justice letter saying that it wasn't allowed. You might think it's not a big deal, but how many of you guys have been to jail before? Or prison, yeah. Always fun to ask our trials that question. But you know, those are the only places that Americans still consistently make time to read books. I, for one, enjoyed my government-induced taxpayer-funded spiritual retreat very thoroughly. It's not just the education thing, though, because then we start thinking about, practically, how do we reduce the power of the state, right? How many of you know about agorism? Might have heard of course. That's a lot of hands. That's awesome. Very educated crowd tonight. So, this is the practice of withdrawing your material support from the state, the term coined by Sam Tonkin III. And it means counter-economics. That's not paying your taxes, not working for government, using barter, working under the table. Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, right?
Yeah.
So, the thing is, that's not going to do it either, at least certainly not the most effective or efficient way to withdraw our support from the state, because in order for that to work, we'd have to get pretty much everyone on board. Imagine if we had 95% of the population agorist, but the other 5% really rabidly support the state, and they still have the guns and the printing presses, the rest of us are still screwed. Seriously, there's got to be some easier way if we're going to get to that critical mass. If we can get 95% of the population doing agorism, and it's a lot harder. Right? Ask people to change their lifestyle based on principle even. So, if agorism isn't going to do it, it means that we have to address the central underpinning of the state, which is its illusion of public consent, right? If the state didn't have an enforcement class of cops and soldiers willing to point guns at peaceful people, they couldn't do what they do. If those cops and soldiers didn't think that what they were doing was serving the American people one way or another, they wouldn't do it. So if we want to make this change happen, we have to get political. Still less embarrassing than Donald Trump. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, this isn't just my obligatory quote from the Declaration because I'm getting ready to run for office. And this might sound a little funny coming from me talking about patriotism because I'm the guy who made the video called Patriotism is for Bitches. Some of you remember that now. I wasn't using the term as a random insult. I mean, very specifically, that when you make your love determined by borders drawn on a map, by politicians and circumstance of history and the authority and the collective and the trappings of that government, you are making yourself at least submissive, if not subservient, to that collective and that authority behind it. The modern mainstream idea of patriotism is un-American. This is what America is supposed to be about. This is what this country was founded on. What makes me a patriot is the fact that in pursuit of these ideals, this country was founded by overthrowing the biggest empire in the world.
Amen.
now to once again overthrow the biggest empire the world has ever known.
Somehow along the way, we were convinced that government was how we pursue these ideals. So, yo, dog, I heard you trust the government. So I got you some fluoridated water, WMDs from Iraq, safe alternatives to marijuana, and a constitution that will protect your rights. Now, I'd love to say that the Constitution is a failed experiment, but that would be intellectually dishonest. Mm-hmm. It is a very successful experiment at using the Bill of Rights as a way of selling the American people a bill of goods to create a stronger central authority that has gotten us to the point where we are at today. This is a taxation step tour. I gotta say, it's really beautiful how this has become a central part of our messaging and our movement, at least online, right? So I would say online, but when I got my tattoo on this tour, there's a guy who went in the next day to the same artist and on across his entire back got a picture of the White House in flames with hashtag taxation steps underneath. It's one of those issues. It's like, it's really irrefutable, right? In order for taxation to not be theft, if you want to argue that with any intellectual integrity, you have to say, well, government actually owns you, which is worse. So, I was at a conference in Malta a few months ago, and one of the speakers there was Andreas Kohl. He's known as Mr. Liechtenstein. And most Americans haven't even heard of the country, let alone have any idea about its governing system. But it's a small country in Europe, less than 40,000 population. And the highest government official, they have a monarchy, the highest official in the country is the Prince of Liechtenstein. And he happens to be a self-described anarcho-capitalist. So you can imagine the dilemma, right? You wake up one day and go, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. And I'm the head of a state. So he puts out a referendum to severely limit his power. Now, Liechtenstein is, again, a very small country, but they also have a lot of local control. The municipalities have a lot of discretion in how they're organized. They have the explicit right to secede in all of their governing documents. And they've done extremely well under the principal guidance of an anarcho-capitalist prince. They have a very highly developed economy, standard of living, quality of life, high tech, very industrialized. Their major export is dental implants. So if you got dental implants in you right now, they may have come from Liechtenstein. And this referendum, when he put it out to the people, it failed overwhelmingly. 70+% of the population said, no, Mr. Prince, please keep your powers. The reason most Americans have not heard of this is that it is the closest thing we have on earth today to voluntary government. And it does very well for people. It's not Somalia. You know what I'm talking about, right? If you hate government so much, why don't you move to Somalia? Right, where there are three governments duking it out and screwing everybody at the same time. I'm really about three governments. But you know what the response to that is, right? If you love government so much, why don't you move to North Korea? In his talk, Andreas said something about this that really, I hate to admit it, triggered me like a snowflake. He said that as libertarians, I don't brace yourselves, right? What triggered out? He said that as libertarians, we should be agnostic when it comes to taxes and regulations. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We got tattoos already. No, no, we're not backing off of this. No, we can't. No, the tribe has spoken. Taxation is dead. We can't do this anymore. So what he meant was, well, let's just say, in the ideal libertarian social order, right, if government were to disappear tomorrow, people would still come together and form communities. They would form organizations. You might have things that even resemble city-states. And, of course, for us, if they are voluntary, people come together and on a private property basis, they don't force anybody into these systems, we don't have a problem with it, right? Because more than the form, the aesthetics of how society is organized, our concern is the ethics, right, that it's done on a voluntary basis with consent. So what he meant was that
if we had that ideal libertarian social order, people would come together and form communities based on their own needs and their own desires and their own aesthetic for how their community should be organized. And if people come together with their private property, form a community, and their homeowners association has really high dues, and they want to call them taxes, and they want to call their thing a government, I'm not going to put a gun to their head and be like, no, you can't use the word government. That's our word, and that's not technically government, right? We're going to respect the right of self-determination of communities in that ideal social order. And what this suggests is not just a new strategy, but a new approach for talking to people that makes this message and our movement have the potential to be far more inclusive. So if someone comes to you and says, I think government should do X, what's the normal response?
No.
Oh, no.
No. Heck no. Hell no. Right? Some version of that. And what do we normally do? We go and argue with them. No, it shouldn't. I'm right. Let me prove to you how right I am about this. That's the political approach. But imagine if someone comes to you and says, I think government should do X. By the way, when people say that, they're never saying, like, I think government should steal half your income. They're never saying, yeah, I think government should be able to drone strike wedding parties on the other side of the planet. I think government needs to be able to lock up innocent people for a plan. Like, no, they're talking about stuff that's connected to real human needs. So when someone says, I think government should do X, what if instead of arguing, you say, all right, so if you think government should do X, are you okay with government doing X just in your community? Are you okay with government doing X in such a way that it doesn't force people into that system against their will? All right, are you okay with, when you have that system, that you don't force it on your neighboring community? Well, then guess what? You're a libertarian. And this gives us a whole other approach to how we move forward, including everyone with localization. So, yes, this is tech support. Your government is doing what? Have you tried turning it off and back on again? Which, of course, begs the question, if you could turn your government off,
right,
why would you ever turn it back on? So the platform. Right now we say we're running for not president because we're not filing FEC paperwork yet. However, it's really more accurate to say that I'm running for not president because I'm really running against the presidency. What we are doing with this election is turning it into a referendum on whether or not the federal government should be allowed to continue to exist at all. When the American people go to vote in November, they will know exactly what they are voting for. You can vote for one of the old parties, or you can vote for something fundamentally different. And it's not for me to be president, it's for the executive order that we will have on our website months in advance of the election that contains, most importantly, my resignation. I'm going in as a bankruptcy agent, and frankly, I don't think there's anything more unlibertarian or anti-freedom you can say than, I want to be president of the United States. I want to be in charge of this giant, violent organization and impose my libertarian ideas on the entire country. I think the only ethical platform is to say, no, I'm going to throw the ring in the fire. So the first thing I'm going to do is resign from the presidency to be custodian of the federal government. And I consider what we're doing with this is going in as a bankruptcy agent. And if there wasn't that legitimate purpose to be described in free market terms, I wouldn't be comfortable doing this. The executive order contains the appointees in advance. We know who is going to be in charge of each agency, not as the secretary of X, but custodian of X for the purpose of carrying out what is as much as possible laid out in as much detail as we can in advance, the entire process for dissolving the federal government agency by agency. And sometimes we ask the question, is it constitutional? Heck no, it's not constitutional. That's kind of the point. We are invoking the higher authority known as the Declaration of Independence, which says we have not only the right, but a duty to alter and abolish systems of government that no longer serve us.
Amen.
So to the nuts and bolts, every agency of the federal government will either be localized, liquidated, or liberated. Now, I love using this just as an example of the localization one. And I talked about this a little bit on the tour last year, so forgive me for those of you who heard this, but when I bought my little 10-acre property in Arizona, it did not connect to any existing roads. So you know what I did, right? I built a road. So the next time you get that question, who will build the road? Don't get too excited. It's a little scratch in the dirt. But we had a little naming contest on the tour last year, so you're going to be seeing this on a street sign pretty shortly. Ma Road. What's my address? 1 Ma Road. How do you get my place? Right on Ma Road. Right there. So, the question, who will build the road? Joe Walter Block wrote a great 500-page book about that. I thought the first 60 pages were great. That was as far as I got. We don't have to argue this when we're putting forward practical policy that immediately improves everyone's lives as opposed to arguing about how many libertarian angels can dance on the head of a pin. The Federal Department of Transportation gets 760 pieces. You already have state DOT. It's not that hard. Now they have the authority over those resources, those facilities, and the opportunity to absorb those personnel if that's what they want to do. Pretty simple. The next one, liquidated. A lot of federal agencies, IRS, DOE, Commerce, Energy, you know, all of these federal regulatory agencies that don't really do anything except try to, you know, the mechanisms of control over the federal government over the state, should simply be liquidated right away. But along with all the other remaining assets of the federal government, we're not going in to try to honor the existing paper debt of the United States federal government. We are disowning the debt. When we say we are going in as a bankruptcy agent to pay back the true creditors of the United States federal government, we're talking about the American people, not the foreign banks or governments or corporations who hold the paper debt. No, that is being disowned. So when the federal government is liquidated, all the funds that remain at the end of the process go to fund Social Security until the money runs out. Now, I don't know how much there's going to be. We can't say because we've been stolen from for so long, and we don't know what's going to be liquidatable and what the status of the federal government is even going to be by the time we build a national consensus to win on this platform. But we've been stolen from for a long time. It could be, and brace yourselves, I know this might be tough to accept, but in order to pull this off, we might have to lower the retirement age to 18. So that's what we do with the money. As we liquidate the federal government, it all goes directly back to the American people. Now, liberated, this is being spun off or privatized or somehow made in a way that's allowed to continue independent of the federal government. This is where I like to use the VA as an example. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to make you stand up and blow smoke up your butts, but are there any veterans here tonight? Okay, so we get to ask this question everywhere. How often do you go to the VA? This is the laugh is all we need, right? Everywhere we go, it's some version of as little as possible. We have a problem in this country when 22 veterans are committing suicide every single day. The VA does not exist to take care of veterans. It exists to make it look like they care about veterans so they can keep convincing gullible young people to enlist. And when I went to the VA, when I got back from Iraq and told them I was having trouble sleeping, I walked out of there with a little paper bag, 5 prescriptions. 3 of them had suicide listed as a side effect. They are literally killing veterans on behalf of the pharmaceutical industry. So what do we do with the VA? There's no reason it shouldn't exist. It just can't be funded by taxes anymore, right? So you spin it off, give it an endowment, put it on a blockchain-based governance system as a private institution in which every single veteran in America gets one ownership voting share. Because when you put those resources directly in the hands of veterans, I guarantee you're not going to have 22 veteran suicides every day. Mm-hmm. So this is it, the new direction for the freedom movement, localization. the everybody gets what they want strategy. You don't have to argue with people anymore about your aesthetic ideal, your utopian world, or your philosophy. It doesn't matter anymore. We're getting down to what we do to take the first important step towards freedom together. If you want government to do this, fine. You can only have it in your community. Don't force on anybody else. Let's move in that direction. Let's have a new revolution for America based on American ideals again. 900 bases in 153 countries is not fighting for your freedom. It is an empire. Now, I thought that this was going to be right away the biggest objection to this platform, right? But without a military, who's going to keep us safe? Which is a silly, dangerous, nonsensical question based on a false premise, because having a military makes us less safe. This is why the founders were against the very concept of a standing army entirely. They knew that a militia was the only legitimate defense of a free people, and government monopoly resulted in the military, which doesn't defend people, they defend government's ability to rule and govern and tax and exploit people. And now, I'm not talking just about the dynamics that come out of this horrifically evil, corrupt system like I experienced myself in Fallujah in 2004, where we made enemies faster than we could kill them, because that's how the global war on terror was designed, right? Not to be won, but to be fought in perpetuity, or at least as long as they could get away with it. I mean even more fundamental than that. And in order to understand this, you have to understand how we have been lied to from a very, very young age. When we are taught about war for the first time, we are told that wars are fought between countries. It was America versus Japan versus Germany versus China versus Russia. You think about it for a second, it's all nonsense. When you understand what government is and why and how wars happen, you understand wars are not fought between countries. They are conducted by governments using violence to expand their protection racket. And when you tell your government, please govern me, please tax my income, subject me to your monopoly defense services, that's what makes you a really juicy target for another government that would come in and do what? Govern you. Like you're being governed now, except that if a new government had to start from scratch, you'd probably take, what, I don't know, a couple hundred years before they could get to the point we're at today, with the average American working for government, about half a year when you add up all the hidden fees and fines and taxes and costs of government. Holy crap! We should be so lucky to have another government come and overthrow ours for us and start from scratch! The founders were absolutely dead on right when they said that the only legitimate defense of a free people is a well-armed population that refuses to be governed by anyone.
Yeah. Amen.
Or as James Madison put it somewhat more eloquently, the means of defense against foreign danger have been always the instruments of tyranny at home. Among the Romans, it was a standing maxim to excite a war whenever a revolt was apprehended. Throughout all Europe, the armies kept up under the pretext of defending and enslaving the people. Y'all know the Bundy Ranch story now. We got guys still in jail almost 2 years later after a couple of mistrials. It's a real tragedy. But if you know the original story, the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, has a standing army. The TSA, and I know it's a really silly standing army that, you know, if they were just hired to dig ditches and build them up, we'd be a lot safer, rather than the kabuki security theater and the false sense of security that we get from that. But then, you know, I mean, here in Texas, especially, you guys have militarized police? A lot of solemn heads nodding. Oh, okay. So you might not be surprised to know that the IRS has SWAT teams. But so does the Department of Education. We are surrounded by the standing armies that our founders warned us against. And make no mistake, if you care about freedom, if you want to see this cause succeed, we have to directly confront militarism, because it is a critical underpinning of statism. Don't believe everything you read on the internet. My favorite Abraham Lincoln quote. It's also my favorite picture of him. Obviously, we live in rapidly changing times. We live in the most globally connected world we have ever experienced. Ludwig von Mises said, when goods don't cross borders, soldiers will. The inverse of that, people who trade don't fight. It's no coincidence we are living in the most peaceful times in human history. Globally, you are less likely today than ever before to be subject to violence at the hands of another human being. When you understand that freedom is essentially nonviolence, it's a beautiful thing to celebrate. Now, I know a lot of you think, right, how many of you would say big government is always worse than small government? Yeah, it's a trick question, right? You can tell. Okay. Would you rather have a government that's half the population and provides more or less what the market would provide and does it peacefully and respects people's rights and exerts just enough coercion to maintain those monopolies? Or a very, very small government that's 1% of the population but murders every firstborn child? You guys see the point, right? The measure of the evil of government is not its size, it is how much it violently takes us off our natural state of harmony. And all around the world now, this mentality is shifting. People are waking up like never before. You can't lie to us and get away with it like you used to be able to, especially when it comes to making wars happen. So what we see now, Kurdistan, Catalonia, making headlines. It used to be that governments could just go and point guns at people going to vote and no one would notice. Not anymore. Sorry, Spain, you can't do that. And it's Brexit, the Scottish vote. You look all over the United States even, right? Vermont, New Hampshire, 51st State Project in Colorado, Jefferson State, Northern California, Southern Oregon. California wants to leave the Union too. You wouldn't miss them, would you? Hawaii, Alaska. How about the Republic of Texas?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. We are no longer bound by the traditional thinking of it has to be that way because it's always been that way. And more than ever before, people are coming together to stand up and demand their right to self-determination. You guys haven't figured out why it's on it. One of the things I'm looking forward to most about dissolving the federal government is that we get to release all the documents. Basically everything, all the records, they're going to be published online with one caveat, because we want to do this responsibly, right? We can't release information that should remain private. So call me a statist if you will, but I would like to see some agency of the federal government spun off with an endowment to be the responsible curator of these records for as long as they're relevant. I think the Library of Congress could serve that purpose as one possibility. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm a conspiracy realist. And I know the government is nothing more than one big conspiracy to screw over the rest of us. So I don't care what your opinions are about Moon Landing or JFK or 9/11, we get these documents out there, we are going to find out once and for all whether the earth is round or flat. 3 months in, it's still hard to do that line with a straight face. So this is me at Fallujah 2004. I'll spare you all the war stories tonight just to make a quick point about a little bit of my personal motivation in this. One of my favorite quotes from Ron Paul is, you don't have to go to Iraq to read the Constitution. Remember when people were still debating whether the war in Iraq was a good idea or not? And the constitutionality of it was an issue? But I think there's something much deeper behind that, that you don't have to go to war yourself to understand that it's the greatest evil that humanity is capable of. But for me, it's a little deeper than that, because during the Siege of Fallujah in April 2004, I was asked to guard a couple of detainees who had been captured trying to leave the city, which of course was being bombarded at the time. And they had sandbags over their heads, their hands zip tied behind their back, they were forced to sit cross-legged on a cement floor in a little guard shack next to the Euphrates River by the bridge where the four Blackwater security contractors had been strung up and burned in the event that precipitated the Siege of Fallujah. And when I got to these gentlemen, they had been in this position for about 12 hours. Mm-hmm. Now, technically, not a stress position, but I dare you to try it. Go sit cross-legged on the floor with your hands behind your back and see how long it takes before you have to move because you're in excruciating pain. If you're not allowed to move, yes, that's a stress position. If you're not allowed to get up and go to the bathroom over a 12-hour period, yes, this is all torture. And that night, when I was asked to guard those men, I could have said, hey, you know that Geneva Conventions card you gave us a couple months ago? Doesn't really add up here. Sorry, can't do this. But no, instead, I followed orders. And that night, I used my Arabic to taunt these men. And I learned Arabic to be better at my job in civil affairs. So it's not just that war is the greatest evil that humanity is capable of, but that government is capable of turning the most well-intentioned people to doing the greatest evil that humanity is capable of. Imagine if everyone was this passionate about things that actually matter. How many of you have heard of Dr. Mary J. Ruart? Oh, awesome. Most hands we've had so far. Now, she is a longtime libertarian activist, wrote a great book called Healing Our World in an Age of Aggression. And she's like, just let those words sink in for a moment. Healing our world in an age of aggression. I really can't imagine a better phrase to describe what we are doing as a movement right now at this point in human history. So if you'll give me a little bit of analogy freedom to make a few points here, I'd like to compare becoming libertarian to simultaneously becoming a doctor while driving down the freeway and coming upon the scene of a major accident. Makes sense, right? Because you want to become better at helping people. You are much more aware of the pain and suffering associated with government, and you interrupt your life often. I mean, a lot of us have this experience as activists, and I would say that an activist is someone who is motivated by a deep-seated sense of injustice. So if you weren't an activist an hour ago, I hope you will be soon. And we pull over because we want to help, right? So imagine you get to the side of the road, and you find there are a dozen people bleeding to death. And you know that with two hands, you can go in and save one person, but if you do, the other 11 are probably going to die. So, of course, you get up and you scream for help, right? And it's maddening sometimes, isn't it, when it feels like everybody's like the people going past in the fast lane, and they can't hear you, and they don't care. And it's tempting to get angry with them, but we have to recognize that a lot of them are dealing with their own legal, medical, financial issues, whatever victimization at the hands of the state that they're dealing with. But that's not most Americans. Most Americans are like the guy in the slow lane who can hear you through the glass, who can see the accident, because even if they're watching the fake news mainstream media, they know the scope of the suffering associated with government, right? The greatest crimes to commit aren't done in secret, they're done in the open. And they just keep driving. And it's maddening. And it's so tempting to get frustrated and give up. And a lot of people do. And in 10 years of activism, I've seen a lot of people burn out. I've seen a lot of people come and go in this movement. And a lot of it's because it's motivated by a negative, confrontational, angry, hateful, resentful mindset. But there's another way that this happens too. Because a lot of people, when they get to that frustration, they go, all right, screw it. Forget the big picture. Maybe those other 11 people are going to die. I'm going to go save one life. I'm going to go work on this one issue, do this one campaign, get this one bad cop fired. And what happens is, they burn out too. Go from issue to issue. Because eventually it gets the feeling like you're playing whack-a-mole with the state. One thing goes down, another pops up. One thing goes down, another pops up. But really it's more like cutting heads off a hydra, right? They just keep growing back more and more and more. And what happens if you play their game? You fight inch by inch. You might win some battles. And what are they going to do? They're going to lap you behind your back and take a mile while you're not looking. And they're going to pat you on the head and say, good little citizen, you follow the democratic process. Here's an Obama phone and an I voted sticker. Now go pay your taxes. Screw that. I don't want to play that game anymore. I want to rock the legs out from underneath the whole goddamn table. And right now, it's our time and our opportunity because it turns out there are enough of us. We don't have to desperately scream for help anymore. All we need to do is take charge as the adults in the room and saying this is not going to continue any longer and present a credible plan to the American people that they can all see exactly what they're getting out of, that they can get behind, that is going to unite people. And I don't mean just the splinter groups within the freedom movement. What we are doing with
platform, what we are doing with this movement now is uniting left, right, and center, all Americans of all political persuasions against the common enemy of big centralized government. So specifically, what we are asking you to do tonight, one, sign up to be a delegate. And I'm not going to get into too much of the nuts and bolts of that tonight. We've got a great campaign manager with Ben Farmer. Excuse me, not campaign manager at this point. We have a great not national delegate coordinator with Angela Fisher Owens. She can explain the process. Texas is a very important state for us, obviously. But it's also one that's competitive, so it's going to be a really interesting one. Even if you can't go to the national convention, we want to encourage all of you to go to the Libertarian Party state convention here in Texas. Get involved, support this platform, support our delegates, because what we're doing in 2018, as Ben mentioned, is we want to introduce localization into the national party platform. Now you guys see why. We want to make a unity statement that says, doesn't matter, left, right, or center, if you want to take the first step in the right direction with us, the Libertarian Party is your party. So Elijah's got a clipboard going around there in the back. Perfect timing, Elijah. And if you sign up on this, we're going to make it as easy as possible for you. This is a big theme in our campaign, similarly to our message to the American people. We can do this the easy way or the hard way. This is the easy way. The hard way is letting a collapse happen and hoping the government spares you in its violent death throes as it desperately clings to power, right? Come out and vote one time in a presidential election, and it might be the last time you ever have to. So, we want to make it as easy as possible for you to be a delegate. Someone will be in contact with you and make sure that you've got whatever other hoops you've got to jump through. There's a couple little ones. In most states, all you have to do to be a delegate is raise your hand at the state convention and say, I want to go to the national convention. In Texas, it's going to be April 13 to 15 next year, and the national convention is June 30 to July 3rd. So if you want to mark your calendars for that, that's in New Orleans, by the way. It's going to be an awesome party. I think that's putting it very mildly. And by the way, since Ben is here, I should really quote him on this. When he said that he used to organize music events, and he used to think that they were way more fun than political events until he got to political events and realized it's just people in suits, but they have all the same drugs. So, especially the Libertarian Party. And by the way, if you've never been to a Libertarian Party meeting, you have to know the biggest danger of showing up to one is that you'll walk away as an officer. How many of you guys have been involved with the LP here in Texas? Awesome. And of course, Ben is a former co-chair in the state, very involved. Vice chair. So, sign up to be a delegate. We're going to make it as easy as possible for you. The reason this is so important, not just with what we're doing in 2018, Drive for 985, setting up for 2020, but that we want to make sure the party platform is defended. And this is something that is particularly important to me because the first introduction to the libertarian message I got was through the Libertarian Party, and I got the politicized version of it. You know, socially awkward, fiscally conservative. Wait, sorry. Socially liberal, fiscally conservative, right. And the thing is, that's not an ethical message, right? That's the politicized version of it. And that didn't stop me from enlisting in the Marine Corps. That didn't stop me from volunteering to go to Iraq, and that didn't stop me from torturing people. If we want to change the world, we have to get out principle-based ethics or ethical messages rather than ones that compromise in order to be political, because that's a guaranteed way to lose. If you compromise on your principles in order to win, you've already lost from the beginning. We don't have to do that in order to move forward. So, number two, get active with the LP. Let's make sure that no washed-up old party candidate can come in and steal this platform that libertarians have worked for decades to make possible. Number three, you can donate money, time, or in kind. And for those of you who understand our financial arrangement right now, we are doing all of our businesses, our 501c3 nonprofit. So, Murdoch, I'd like to thank you for your $10,000 worth of consulting services that you provided for the Freedom Fund this evening, and provide you with an appropriate receipt in order to reduce your federal tax liability in a completely legal, appropriate way. So if any of you guys seriously want to work with our nonprofit in any way that reduces your federal tax liability, we like helping people pay less in taxes. Join a special team. One of the advantages of organizing a presidential campaign so many years in advance is that we get to organize people in a meaningful way that plays off your skills, your talents, your abilities, leveraging them for maximum effect in a way that's sustainable for you.
So we have a lot of different teams that we're organizing. I'm going to be passing out flyers in a couple minutes here. And when I do that, you'll see a list of some of the teams that we're organizing. Five, win converts. We kind of shy away from this, but we're not converting people to a dogma. It's the anti-dogma. We're giving people the gift of thinking for themselves. This is something that you all enjoy, so don't shy away from it, right? And we know that if you convert someone to thinking for themselves, they'll become a libertarian eventually, right? So, more important to give than that. And that's why I wrote this book when I was in jail. It's the ultimate red pill. I say that with all humility because I had a lot of help writing, including from some people who are here tonight. We had over 300 people involved in the writing and editing process to make it a super polished thing that you can hand someone with absolute confidence, no conjecture, no opinion, no wishful thinking, just straightforward statement of fact that everyone can accept. And they're free tonight, along with all the other stuff we have on the table out there, because enough people who have donated in the past, who have read this book, wanted to get more people to read it, who paid it forward. So that's why we're able to do a tour like this and give books away for free all over the country. Number six, be awesome to everyone. Yeah, you don't hear a lot of politicians saying that, right? Even the opposition, even the enemy, even the statists, yes. A lot of libertarians are quick to point out that it is just this singular philosophical point of voluntarism, self-ownership, the non-aggression principle. But I would say that if you're here, if you bother to show up because of that understanding, it's because you care. It's because you care about people, because you want to make the world a better place for people. If you're a capitalist, you want to provide value to people. And you can do this with every interaction, every exchange, every relationship. And this will radically change your life when you really embrace this and change how you deal with everyone. When people are telling jokes, even if they're bad jokes and they're hard to laugh at like mine, laugh at them anyway. That's my little Jeb Bush please clap moment. This is not an instructional slide. This is a warning. When you're talking about these ideas, you're going to be dealing with emotional, irrational people. Why? Because people are emotional and irrational. Even libertarians, get over yourselves. If you stay present to this, if you're ready for this, it means that you can stay centered, you can stay in the love and not push that button. And if you do that, you will never get dragged down to that level. It's kind of a technical diagram. We'll leave this up for a minute so everybody can figure out exactly how this works. Some people have told me, Adam, why are you doing this? You're never going to win. They're going to shoot you first. Yeah, Marina can laugh at that. I've risked my life for far less worthy causes before. That is not going to deter me at all. They've also said you're never going to win this race because they're going to cheat. And it's true that they can keep people off the ballot, they can cheat around the margins, but we have exit polls. Can you imagine if Hillary Clinton was polling at 90% on election day and the next day they came out and said, nope, it was Trump by a hair. Government would have no credibility. Now, we're not going to win with this platform with 34% to the old party's 33-33. We're probably going to need to win at the exit polls with an overwhelming majority, with a clear public consensus that Americans do not consent to the federal government continuing on at all. So it might have to be 60%, and we have to be ready for that. We have to know what we're up against. Now, I want you to know that I can be realistic, and as a politician, this might, by the way, I have to always point out, I'm not a politician, I just play one in real life. But there's a slight chance that in 2020, we might not win. I know. Shocking, right? Now, this is not an educational campaign. We are running to win, and we will be ready to win, and we will have a clear plan laid out in the form of an executive order on our website months before the presidential election so the American people have a clear alternative to the old party system. If we hit this black swan moment before 2020, then we get to start in 21. But if all we're able to do is maintain the linear progress, and I don't think it's linear, I think our progress is exponential as a movement, but if we just continue it in a linear way, and we present something that is a serious alternative to the American people in 2020. By the way, I love Gary Johnson. I consider him a personal friend. He's a man of integrity who has proven that in his governorship beyond a shadow of a doubt. But I have no problem saying that what he represents to this party is another failed strategy. When you go to the American people and say, I'm socially liberal and fiscally conservative, I'm the best of both worlds. What do they say? You mean both shit worlds that we don't want anything to do with? But when we come out and we say, no, here's a real alternative, that's when we're going to get people engaged in a whole other way. And most importantly, we're not trying to go just for existing Democrats and Republicans in terms of the voters. We're going for the 40% of the eligible voters in America who never vote in presidential elections. So if in 2020 all we do is clear 10% and have a breakout year for the LP, it means that we will have planted the flag on this idea indelibly in the minds of the American people that they can vote no one for president, that they are too good for this government, we don't have to be united under one government to be united in American values. So that if we do that in 2020, it means that every day the federal government screws up between then and 24, we get to be the ones to say, if you had voted for this platform, that agency wouldn't even exist right now. And I think that in 24, we can be competitive. And I think at that point, we're going to be getting around 25%. And that's what we should be demanding by then as a party and as a cause and as a movement. But if we don't win in 24 and the federal government still exists in 2028, I can't imagine that we haven't built a national consensus by that point that it shouldn't be allowed to continue to exist at all. Regardless, I will continue to run on this platform until the federal government ceases to exist one way or another.
Yeah.
Alright, bring everybody in from outside. This is the fun part. We're going to wrap this up with some highlights about what it means to end the Fed. First of all, no more IRS!
Yeah.
That's a really easy crowd pleaser, right? Who wants big pay raise? No more inflation tax! The biggest thing is we understand monetary policy. No more federal gun laws! No more FCC, more freedom of speech, especially for the internet. No more FDA, no war on drug users. Sorry, it's going to be a kind of long list. No more militarization of local police. No more Department of Justice. No more political prisoners. That means we immediately free the Bundys, Schaefer Cox, Leonard Peltier, Ross Ulbricht, and immediately pardon Edward Snowden. No more Department of Homeland Security. No more TSA. Sorry for those of you who actually enjoy getting held up at the airport. No more national debt, because forcing your children to pay for shit that they didn't have a say in is intergenerational child abuse.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to walk on. There are a lot of benefits, and I mean, we could go on for hours. Just, you guys want to play a game? We can name something we haven't yet. One of the benefits of abolishing the federal government. Yeah! We'll be here all night. Alright, so, no more BLM, that's not Black Lives Matter, that's Bureau of Land Management. No more Bureau of Indian Affairs, which means that sovereign native tribes actually get to become sovereign native tribes, and we can do something to honor so many broken treaties. No more NSA, I know it's the only part of government that actually listens. No more ATF, I'll be the first to open the convenience store if nobody beats me to it. No more CIA, no more FBI, no more military-industrial complex, which means, most importantly, no more daylight saving time! You guys noticed that was the one you got most excited about. If we don't win in 20, we're thinking of 24, we'll change the platform to No more daylight saving time. Adam is dictator for life. Oh yeah, sorry. One other huge benefit of dissolving the federal government, leaving 50 independent states, means the Olympics will be that much more competitive. Go Texas, right? Right, so now you guys did a lot of that judge. It's not going to be competitive. Texas is still going to kick everybody's butt.
Yeah.
All right. Thomas Jefferson, every generation needs a new revolution. Are we a little behind?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I would hope that all of you understand that what we are doing with this movement, with this campaign, is much more evolutionary than revolutionary. But make no mistake, what we are doing right now, even in this room here tonight, will be written in the history books as the final American Revolution. This is our time. This is our opportunity for our generation to step up and fulfill the promise of the first American Revolution. And this is possible now because Americans have realized already that we are too good for this government. We don't have to be united under one government to be united in American values. So we are going to fulfill the promise of the first American Revolution. We are going to once again overthrow the biggest empire the world has ever known and finally free America. Thank you very much.